We're excited to launch the Her Sport Behind the Business podcast. So we did try this about 9 months ago and it didn't quite go as we expected. We want to share a bit of behind the scenes, what goes on at Her Sport, the journey that we are experiencing, every couple of weeks, every couple of months, things just change all the time and we want to share as much of that with our community as possible and for you guys to get to know the team a bit better. We know that people want to get to know a bit about the faces behind the business more. It's something that we have probably been a bit shy to do. We've definitely gotten better at it over the last 3.5 years, mm-hmm. but we were probably not so great at the very beginning. So we're going to start off by introducing ourselves as founders. So off you go.
I'll let you go first.
Okay. So I suppose my name is Niamh Tallon. I'm from Selbridge. I went to St. Wilson's Community School and was involved in sport all through growing up. So I would have started off in swimming to learn how to swim and make sure that I had that as a life skill as opposed to being a competitive swimmer, which is what I ended up doing. So I would have swum competitively all through secondary school, but also tried out a number of other sports along the way. So did horse riding for a long time. I played a bit of hockey in Camogie and TY. I decided I wanted to try something new and I would have done a bit of athletics in secondary school as well. Tried things like stage school and ballet, but didn't really last very long in those types of things. But yeah, I guess sport for me is somewhere I've always felt comfortable and I've enjoyed it. So tell us a bit about you.
This feels like college when you're introducing yourself to new people. My name is Mohammed. I am the co-founder of Her Sport. I'm the ghost in the background. You don't usually see me. I am big into sport. I suppose sport has been a huge part of my life since I was like 4. If you look at photos of me as a kid, I had a football in my hand the whole time, so I've been told. Went to school in Dublin. I was born in South Africa, grew up in Mozambique, but went to school in Dublin. We obviously met in UCD in commerce. That's how our friendship began. I suppose for me, I've always wanted to do something in sport, but always thought that if I didn't play sport, what else could you get involved in? Wanted to be a footballer, that never happened. And then went into KPMG, did my accountancy exams, had a great time. And during my time in KPMG, we obviously started Her Sport as a fun project, which has now blossomed into something that I don't think either of us could have ever imagined, really.
Okay, so we've touched a little bit on how we know each other in the start of the business, but we're not going to dive into the business just yet. I guess growing up, you said you were mad into sport. You were playing sport. Did you watch a lot of sport?
Yes, I suppose I used to watch a lot of football, big Liverpool fan, consumed a lot of rugby, cricket. Honestly, anything that was on TV, I'd watch. Like if you ask anyone I know, they say all I do is watch sport. I'd like to consider myself a bit of a nerd when it comes to sport, but interestingly enough, I suppose looking back, I know it's one of your questions to ask me is, did I watch any women's sport? And the answer would be no, not because I thought men's sport's better than women's sport or anything like that, just because I just consumed what was on TV. And as a kid, whatever's put in front of you, you'll watch, whether it's actual sport, whether it's movies, TV shows. It's what narrative you're kind of getting shown is what you consume. And the answer would be no, I didn't consume any women's sport because there was no women's sport on TV. And at the time growing up, you probably didn't have that good of access to internet as well. So from my perspective, I watched a lot of sport, but it would predominantly be men. What about you?
I suppose from my perspective, we wouldn't be a really big like football house or GAA house. My family would be interested in like the Olympic sports and stuff, so definitely would have watched things like the Olympics. On both sides of my family, people are interested in athletics as well, or have participated in athletics, so that's something probably like European Championships, World Championships, we probably watched a bit of that. Again, what was on television, I would have watched football when I was younger, and probably I'm the oldest in my house, my brother is next to me. He's just under 3 years younger than me. And probably when he started watching football, I probably started watching it with him. My parents wouldn't have been like really interested in football, but it began with my brother. And I would have watched it with him. He was a Man United fan at that stage. So we watched.
Who does he support now?
City. So growing up, I would have watched a good bit of like of those games and that. And to be fair, actually, my two cousins are really interested in football as well. They're big United supporters, so I probably did it because they were interested in it. Mm-hmm. But it's never something like I tried playing football actually in secondary school. I thought like, Ronan can play, surely I'll be all right. Like I can run. It wasn't really the case, but I didn't really see the opportunity. I didn't see like girls playing football. So mm-hmm. I think how I ended up in something like ballet or stage school and stuff. That's maybe sometimes what girls did. And for primary school, we didn't really play sport in primary school, which I think when I heard later that actually, like I went to a secondary school where there would have been four or five different schools come together to go to that same secondary school. And some of the other schools had that opportunity where, the after school opportunities for us weren't there in things like sport. It was all outside of school. So I didn't really have that exposure to things like football or to GAA. And you see, because my parents weren't really into GAA, again, that started with my brother. And my sister played a bit, and I think probably because she's younger than me, she followed what he was doing. So I always wonder, like, if I was younger than him, would I have gone into something like football and mm-hmm. And GAA and camogie if I was younger than him, because that's what he was doing. But yeah, then I kind of fell out of it. I just didn't find myself like really interested in it. And I wonder, like, could it have been different if there were yeah. women, like, obviously following a lot of the Irish football team and that at the moment.
But when you see what things are like now, are you almost jealous?
I think we've a long way to go.
Yeah.
For sure. But I think like I love meeting all the little girls. Like we, you know, go around to schools or go around to clubs and meet like, you know, 12 and 13 year olds. And I really do love meeting the kids and teenagers that are really passionate about sport and like really into that fandom. And I didn't have that, to be fair, going to like games. I probably went and watched local sport. Like I had to go and watch my brother because I wasn't allowed to stay at home by myself. Like, but no, the fandom that the kids have now, I think is brilliant. And like, they're all so excited, where that's not something that I did as a kid. So jealous. Yeah, I suppose it's something to be proud of. And like, people love supporting their country or supporting their team. And you know, the sports that I was involved in, like mainly when I was up as far as like I did horse riding till I was about 12 or 13. And then I was swimming a lot and they're, yes, they can be team sports, but I would have been competing in an individual capacity. And I really like the team element of swimming. Like everyone is like always backing each other and really getting into it. But I think that fandom and excitement yeah. probably wasn't there.
And then I know we were saying what we used to consume and how we got into sports. So fast forward a few years, how was her sport founded?
So I guess like I have always followed sport and you know, I went to the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro with my family. We wanted to go over because it was the last Olympic Games that Michael Phelps was going to be competing in. You think we probably would have tried to go to London because it was a bit closer, but anyway, after Rio we went, which was a brilliant experience. And I guess, you know, I would follow a couple of particular sports you know, quite closely, and I would have known of the results that some of the female athletes were getting, and would have seen the media coverage around some of the male athletes and some of the female athletes, knowing that there was history being made for some female athletes you know, across different sports and different countries, and just not seeing as much about it. So I guess that's something that probably at the time I had finished my undergraduate degree and I had been considering like doing a digital marketing master's at the time, and I think probably because I had that background, had an understanding of it from a business and a marketing perspective, which is something that you just like, you're not thinking like that when you're 12 or 15 or 17 mm-hmm. even. So yeah, I did my master's in digital marketing then 2016, 2017, and after that was considering like going into research to do a PhD around women's sport and the reason that girls and women drop out. And yeah, to be honest, I didn't want to commit to the 4 years. I felt that, you know, the research would be really interesting, but it wouldn't bring around enough change. And I guess from my master's, had the skills to, you know, create the website and to create social media content. Like I had like a skill set in that and a comfort in what that was. And I had done an internship in a publishing company. So I understood the business model. So yeah, I guess that's how it started.
So then I question, what made you do air sport if you already did a... a little stint in a publishing company, surely you saw what things were like on the other side and were like, can you see myself doing this?
Yeah, no, honestly, when I was in the publishing company, I thought like, this isn't really the industry that I would want to be in. Like, it's a really, really tough industry. Mm-hmm. And I think from the perspective of like, why did I do it? Because I saw that there was a huge gap there. Like, we know obviously now that the, you know, media coverage for women in sport globally is 4% of sports media mm-hmm. coverage, which is such a low statistic. And, you know, as a fan, I was frustrated. But then also by the time university came around and I was, you know, 22, 23, most of my friends weren't participating in sport. And, you know, it's always something that I got a lot of enjoyment out of. And I would say, like, really developed, like, my skills from a personal perspective and a professional perspective. And I just didn't see, like, girls sticking at it and like wondered why people dropped out. So like I wanted to explore like the marketing of women's sport, the content creation, you know, what are we talking, or like, are we actually looking at the barriers that girls and women face? How, like, do we have a comfort level in like, you know, body image, like body hair, menstrual cycle, periods, like, is there enough conversation around that? As an example, like, we would have talked about nutrition when I was in the swim club. Like, we would have had someone come in and talk to us about you know, food and diet and that type of thing, but never really touched on menstrual cycle and you know, for a sport like swimming, like, you're hugely exposed in the pool. And several years later, then, when my sister was swimming, she's 6 years younger than me, they did have those conversations when she was leaving the club, and so it was good to see that there was that shift and starting to have those conversations. But yeah, I was just interested in the area and I thought that there was opportunity. And I thought, like, you know, I suppose it was what, like 22 or 23 when I came up with the concept. So I didn't have a huge amount of responsibility. I was like, right, we can try this, see how it goes. At this point in time, it's going to, you know, cost me a couple hundred euro to buy the name, buy the hosting and my time to create the website and the content. But as you said, you were at KPMG at the time and started off helping create some content. Do you remember those days?
Yeah, I think everything you said there, I was obviously involved in the background of it all. I remember the first time you called me, it was at like 5:30 or something. I was leaving KPMG, like walking out the doors, not leaving KPMG. And you called me and you were like, her sport that I use is available, should I just buy the domain or not? And I was just like, sure, go for it. And it all started from there, which is kind of funny when you think about it. Everything started from a website, some small social media accounts. I think Sonia O'Sullivan was one of the first people to follow us on Sunita Instagram.
Sunita Pushpore was in there as well, for sure.
And to see where we are now, it's crazy. But yeah, I was in KPMG still, obviously doing auditing and accounting, and on the side creating content for her sport, which is interesting. I suppose from my side, I started, like, I got involved because obviously, like, I wanted to help you, and we were like, I love sport, so anything to do with sport I was in all like, regardless. And then just started to learn more and more about the athletes. I think the under 20 or under 23,
under 18s, under 20s had a really successful summer now.
Sarah Healy was racing, Rashida Adlecki was racing, Kira Neville was racing, just learning about those athletes. And then once you learn about who they are, what their story is, we did a few interviews with them, you get invested, and ever since then you just follow their journey.
So now you're telling people you've been following now.
Honestly, Rashida, I've been following you since you were 14 years old. I'm telling you, it's been some journey and we're still going strong. But yeah, it's been eye-opening as well, because for me, you always hear the argument or the trolls that say no one cares about women's sport, or who cares, there's no audience there, etc. When you actually dive into it, one, look at the audience that we've built now, like ourselves and the team, we're at over 150,000 people in our community, and the interest is there. The research shows that, is it Kelly Harrington, Katie Taylor and Katie McCabe are the three of the most liked athletes in Ireland across male and female. And then also from the perspective of entertainment, that's what sport is. Sport's about entertainment. You can say this or that, or we don't run as fast, etc., but are you entertained, yes or no? And if you are, then sport's done what it needs to do. And for sport to be entertaining, you need the likes of ourselves, you need the likes of other media outlets to share the stories of the athletes. You need to build rivalries. You need to create engaging content.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know my opinion on Formula One, but Formula One has
had huge success through the documentaries.
Exactly,
that
and you see other sports following suit now. You have golf have something similar. Tennis are doing something similar as well. Content is key when it comes to sport and entertainment. That's what it is, entertainment at the end of the day. And I saw just from my own experience of when we started riding it, just how much I wanted to know more about these athletes and find out more about these athletes. So,
were you surprised at how interested you were?
No, because at the end of the day, sport is sport.
Mm.
Like, you cannot, like, movies are great, TV shows are great, but like nothing beats live sport because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's so real. So, and that's what you get, like, with what we've seen for the past however long we've been doing this, since 2018, it's been great, like, story after story. You're just like, wow, I can't believe I didn't know about this person before. Like, mm-hmm. the likes of, I'll be honest, I didn't know who Katie McCabe was. I didn't know who Kelly Harrington was. I didn't know who, like, Rashida was before I started watching. And now you're just like, how do more people not know about them? So, yeah.
And it's, like, we talk about it a bit, but, like, it's double the entertainment. Like, for people that say they're sports fans, like, I know we've kind of put it to people a little bit, like, are you sports fans? Are you men sports fans? Like, mm-hmm. what kind of content do you consume? Are you only consuming men's sport? Like, is the thing, because a lot of people would pride themselves in being a sports fan, but then the question is, like, are you a true sports fan? And, like, as you said, like, there's so much entertainment in there, and, you know, whether it's football, rugby, athletics, badminton, like, whatever the sport, like, there's so much there. There's so much excitement to be had and more enjoyment. Like,
and that's what it's all about. I think people are starting to see that more as well. Like, we mentioned the documentaries that people are doing, and then if you look at, I know it's a bad example, but the likes of KSI and Logan Paul, they're doing influencer boxing now.
Mm-hmm.
And those numbers are getting more numbers than pay-per-view buys in say other boxers, which is crazy to think. And people are like, oh, but it's crap. Like, the quality is crap. No, but it's entertaining.
Yeah. And people will watch it. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's what sport is all about. It's all about entertainment, regardless of what people think. The majority of young people now don't really want to watch full matches. They don't really want to watch full sporting events. It's all about how can we create engaging content to keep the interest of people who are consuming content on TikTok all the time and Instagram Reels, etc. So that's the interesting part. But I think women's sport, like you said at the very start, we still have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still so much more that we can do, but it's so exciting to be a part of, to see, well, we are part of this journey now, obviously with her sport, but we are also following the likes of Rashida and following the likes of, say, Ellen Molloy, etc., all these young athletes, and what potentially they can achieve in 5-10 years time. And hopefully for Rashida's case, in August she might win a medal at the Worlds.
So you have come from a football background, and, like, mm-hmm. you played football. I know some of your brothers played football. You consume football. Did you ever play with any girls?
I don't believe so.
Okay, interesting.
I can't remember.
Yeah, because I know my brother's team on his soccer team and on his ska team, there were always, like, a couple girls, and not many. Like, I remember there was, like, one particular girl that played with them all the way up through the ages until she wasn't allowed to play with them anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I know, in the soccer team, I can remember at least one girl that played with them for a bit. Did you notice the fact that there weren't girls playing? Were there girls' teams?
No, well, like I said, I probably in my formative years between the ages of 3 and 9, I grew up in Mozambique, where I'm pretty sure there were no girls teams at all. I'm fairly confident of that. And then when I came here, I started playing again, and it wasn't anything that I mean, I also should caveat that I grew up with 4 brothers, so no girls came into my eyesight or eyeline at all. So it was never something I considered at all. It's just normal.
You just maybe weren't even aware of.
Not at all. And it wasn't something I would have ever thought about.
Yeah.
Like, growing up, just was focused on my own sport and what I was doing. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, and I think that's the same for the majority of people,
mm-hmm.
whether it's playing, parents, coaches, until you have someone who is involved or like a reason to be made aware of it, you're very likely going to pass
just keep
through.
Doing exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's what we've noticed a lot, and I know we've seen you know, some male athletes that have had daughters come out and speak about it a bit, and then people are criticizing them, but like, you know, we have to be fair and reasonable and just think about, like, you know, your own life and just reflect on it, like, you know, whether people like to admit it, we are probably a bit like have tunnel vision.
Absolutely.
And just keep doing like
what
we do.
I think it's normal to see, whether it's in politics, whether it's a cause that affects you or anything like that, until something directly affects you, you're not going to really consider
it. Or this conversation, and I guess that's the benefit of having something like social media, where you can you know, bring those conversations to the fore and get it in front of more eyes. I think from my perspective, I didn't really notice, like, I suppose there was always that girl that was playing with my brother, but I didn't really notice that there weren't like girls teams or you know, at kind of older age groups as well. So when I was in transition year, the reason that I actually started playing camogie was because they were looking for people to make up team. And they were saying, will you come down and play? I was down watching my brother play a game, and I was like, I literally have never played camogie. I don't do very many ball sports. I was like, I played a bit of football from first year till fourth year, until our team got cut because we hadn't got enough people. And they just needed numbers. So the team was made up of, you know, five or six girls that were, I'd say, under 22. And then it was a lot of people that played camogie, a lot of moms that were coming back to play camogie, hadn't played since they were maybe in primary school, or maybe they played in secondary school as well. They'd all played together. And to be honest, even then, I don't think I gave it too much thought. Like, I think I kind of felt like it was normal that there wasn't a girls' team. And, you know, I was happy to be part of the team and, you know, make up the numbers. I certainly was no superstar. But, you know, it's probably 12 years on from when that team went out, and there's still some of the same team are playing, and there's more girls have come up, and it's a younger team now. I don't think I really gave it that much thought at the time. And I don't think I really noticed that there weren't that many girls down playing when I was going down to watch my brother, what the story was. Like, I think I was just like, well, I'm involved in horse riding and swimming, and I'm going to, you know, keep going with that. And I suppose what's interesting is anything that I really was put into, my brother was, but I wasn't put into necessarily what he was. And part of that probably comes with being the oldest. So like, I was doing horse riding, so he was doing horse riding. I was doing swimming, so he was doing swimming. I was doing music, so he was doing music. It was like, we just put them all in the same thing. And that was something that he did differently, was that he played football, he played soccer, and he played hurling as well. And I didn't play any, like, I again played camogie because they needed people, but not because I was being put into it.
Going back to her sport, did you ever think you'd have your own business?
I probably thought that I had the potential to have my own business, but it wasn't necessarily something that I wanted. Mm-hmm. And what I'd say about that is, not that I really do enjoy what we do, and I enjoy having a business and that type of thing, but I've always been exposed to the challenges that come with having your own business. For years and years, like, you know, I've met different people and they're like, I'd love to have my own business, and I'd love this, that, and the other. And I'm like,
everyone makes it seem so like desirable, but
yeah, it's like I'd love to have my own business, I'd love to work for myself. And I'm like, okay, but like, what does that really mean? And I suppose for me, you know, you're asking, did I want to have my own business? No, I didn't really grow up with that want, but it's because like, my dad has his own business, and I have watched him, I suppose, since, you know, I was a kid, and you know what it takes. And I suppose for us, like, my mom stayed at home. My mom would have, you know, minded all the kids and got us to school and brought us to appointments and brought us to sport and like all that type of thing. And my dad would have been working, but like, my dad used to go to work he'd be in for like 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. He might not be home until 6:30, 7, 8 o'clock, whatever it was. Like, I definitely remember through like recession times and stuff, like, he was like very, very busy. And he doesn't just like work Monday to Friday. He was like, would have been working Saturdays as well. I know they had a rota for, you know, 4 o'clock shifts, 4 a.m. shifts on Sundays as well, that was shared around. So I guess I've seen that, and how challenging it can be. And that wasn't something that I necessarily wanted to sign myself up. Like, everything lands on you.
Did you think being a woman in business, did that ever, I suppose, set boundaries for yourself? Or did you, like...
I don't think that I ever really felt that different to a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just the way that I was brought up. And I probably took the role of being the oldest as being the leader mm-hmm. in the house. And it always used to bother me, like the land would go to, you know, the eldest boy, like all these things that you read about mm-hmm. in history. And that's something that I would have always challenged. They'd be like, oh, you know, the house can go to your brother. And yeah. I know they're just like, that's not something that was being done in our house. And I know times have moved on in most cases around that. But I would have felt very strongly about the fact that I was the oldest. Now, that's not the way things are going to happen in our house. But that's just something I would have felt that, you know, boys and girls, men and women should have the same opportunities. But we've always been raised like that. So no, I don't think I would have seen that. And I would think that I'm quite like my dad in some ways. And in terms of business, like I did have a taste of it over the years. Like I, you know, did things like transition your mini company and tried my hand at a couple other things like throughout secondary school.
Mini company college idea.
As well. What was our mini company name?
Idea.
Oh, well, the name was Jot It. We sold personalized whiteboards and corkboards. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I told you what ours was.
And we made money.
Well, we didn't. Telling you. We bought bouncy balls and not a single one was sold.
And we made...
That was a terrible idea.
We continued on working on it after we'd actually finished school into the summer. We did it in our own school. We did it in local primary schools and stuff as well. So I guess that's the first, like it's a starting experience of business and, you know, figuring out generating revenue and profit and loss and all this type of thing. And
still figuring that out.
Did end up being the managing director, and I have had other instances where I've been like a group leader or something like that, and it's not necessarily always something that I want to do, but it's something I know I can do. Okay, so one of the questions here is, can you tell people in a nutshell what we do?
I always struggle with that one because we do so much mm-hmm. that it's difficult to pinpoint what exactly. And I know, like, we've done pop-ups and everything, and it's so difficult. Like, I hear what you say, and then you hear what I say, and it's like, oh, we forgot this, or we should include this. I'd be interested to see what you say, and then I'd probably critique it and tell you what we can.
I think that's something that we do definitely want to share more about, is like people obviously come onto the website and they come onto our social media platforms, and a huge part of our business is content creation. Mm-hmm. So most of the time that's what people think we do is a lot of content creation. And then we do partnerships with brands that want to connect with our community. And that's what we started. Like we started as a media first business. We wanted to make an impact. So we started with creating that news content, interview content, you know, athlete features that other people weren't. And then what we also wanted to do was make an impact. So make an impact from the media coverage perspective, but also for those girls that were dropping out of sports. So we do a lot around education. We do education in schools, in clubs, in businesses. And then at the moment, we're looking at doing some online workshops as well, which is, I would say, the second most important, you know, piece of our business in terms of, you know, we want to put a huge focus on developing that this year. Then we also have our sport merchandise, which started off because we wanted to make sure that we had branded merchandise when we were in videos or if we were doing any content with athletes or ambassadors. And it's something that has been ongoing. Like the workshops only started in the last like year or 9 months, where the merchandise, to be fair, we had it like pretty early on. And you know, it's great to see when you're out walking around and you randomly see someone that you don't know in a sport jumper or a hat or something. And then we launched our membership platform last year, where members have access to benefits, which are like free tickets to games. It can be discounts for different brands. It could be for the Hersport brand. And then there's a monthly competition. So is that it?
Yeah, that's
what
everything.
What else do we do?
That's pretty much it. You've nailed it there.
Look, I know, I guess one of the things that we always have is lots and lots of ideas. So they're the probably four key areas of the business that we're working on at the moment, with the content and advertising, you know, kind of top priority, because that generates the most money for us at the moment. With the education is something that we really see a lot of opportunity to do more of, and that obviously brings about the impact piece, which was something we hugely want to do.
We've been going for officially 3.5 years.
Yeah.
What, if I asked you top two or top three highlights, what would they be?
Top two or three highlights.
Or just one, if there's not that many.
Oh, there's definitely more than three. It's just like, it's hard to say like which are the top. I guess we started off like at the very beginning, even before we were, you know, properly operating as a business, like we did start in 2018, the Her Sport Awards, and we did that. So we have actually done that for 5 years, and a lot of the winners are on the wall behind us. And then I think bringing that to life and bringing that to an actual in-person event was a big thing to do. Like, you know, having a couple hundred people come and attend the awards and celebrate the incredible Irish female talent that's you know, representing us in different sports and that type of thing was brilliant. And the fact that you know, meeting people in person is one thing, and I think that's something that we can be a little bit detached from sometimes, because we do so much online that, you know, when we meet people it's really cool. But the fact that we also like brought that to television as well, and we've had it on TG Cahir for 2 years as one of our national television stations, like I think that's something that we should be really proud of, and probably take it in our stride, and there's so much going on through the awards that you just keep going. But yeah, I think that's been brilliant. I know one of the other reasons we wanted to launch the Behind the Business podcast now was because we've just shared the brilliant news that we've been accepted onto the Social Entrepreneurs Ireland Changing Ireland Accelerator Programme, which is really exciting news. And we'll be getting mentorship for a year and €60,000 funding, which is going to go towards developing the education side of the business. So that's something that we've actually applied for their grants and their support and their programs for the last 3 years. So to finally get onto the program is something that I'm really excited about and proud of as well. And then, yeah, I suppose some other ones would be producing 2 magazines to a circulation of 41,000 people is impressive. And when you hear that Her Sport is being mentioned in classrooms, and the fact that we're in the Leaving Cert PE book, and we're on the first year SPHE book or program as well. And the fact that there's conversations, like I've had, you know, friends of mine say like, oh, my brother or sister is in class, and they were all talking about Her Sport when it came to gender equality in sport and media and having those conversations, which I think is just cool when you hear of how far the conversation is actually going, and you meet some of the super fans, or you hear some of the super fans. Yeah. I know there's a lot of people that really do love what we do. So I know there's loads and loads of other things, and it's like 3.5 years. It doesn't seem like that long a period of time, but so much has changed for us so rapidly that sometimes it can be hard to remember what's actually happened in 3.5 years. But what about you? Are there any different things that I haven't mentioned there that stand out?
I probably am not going to name three, but I think for me, in particular, I find myself pretty bad at being able to look back and be like, geez, look how far we've come, or appreciate what we've done. But I absolutely am proud of what we've achieved so far. And I think I believe in ourselves so much that I'm not content to where we are. I think there's so much more that we can do. But I think when I do look back, and when I think about how it started, it's pretty crazy that we're in an office now. We have a really, really strong team of 5.5, ranging from 5.5 to 8 people, depending on the day, and probably going to be more over the next few months, which is really cool. And like, it's so exciting to see that, one, like you said, people know Her Sport, people are representing Her Sport, but also that we have a team that are now going to help us get to where we want to be as well. I think that's so exciting to think that it all started with just a social media post and just the two of us,
and like if bad you look, graphics.
Oh god, yeah. It is crazy to think about when you look back at it. But like I said, I think that us as individuals and the team that we have are so ambitious that I'm not surprised that we are here at the same time. And I know that there's so much more that we can do and so much more impact that we can have, that's really exciting. So it's a bit of like, oh, it's great that we're here, but
you want to do more.
And not, I think it would be injustice to ourselves and the team if we didn't do more, because there's so much opportunity in women's sport and what we're trying to do, and there's so much talent in our team that it would be a huge shame if we didn't do more. Like, we could be happy where we are now, but there's just so much more that we can do, which is exciting.
Do you think that your ambition has changed from, say, the first year?
Yeah. I think absolutely. And this is probably something that a lot of people who start off their own business go through. It's about verifying and seeking validation in the idea and being like, okay, we're on the right track. Mm-hmm. There's obviously times at the very start when you are like, is this the right thing to do? Are we doing the right thing? Are the small wins there or not? But it's also, I think if you don't believe in the idea, or if you don't have the passion for it, we would have given up a lot, like at the very start, because you don't get those like small wins.
Is it fair to say you found the first year hard?
Yes and no. Hard in believing the idea, but like I always say, people are always like, "Oh my god, you guys are so brave, stepping away from full-time work to like start your own business. Like that's security." But I always say, like, not to like be modest or anything, but like we are in a fortunate position where we could, one, always like go back to a full-time position if we needed to, and that like we don't have like kids of our own or a mortgage or anything to have.
I think, like, you know, through the different programs or different entrepreneurs that we meet through networks or different events, like, you know, even MVPs. I was speaking to you know, somebody a couple of weeks ago, and she was like, oh, like, look what you're doing, like, you know, I should be out there like doing the, this person wants to like launch their own business a bit more. And you know, she's actually somebody that I've known for 10 or 11 years, but like we're in completely different positions. And you know, when we launched Her Sport as a business, like the two of us were 24. And you know, you had the opportunity to live at home with your family, and so did I, and that's decisions that we made. We also both came from full-time work, so we had an amount of savings that was what was there. And say for this particular person, you know, she has two kids, she has a family, people that are you know, relying on her, and that's just something that we didn't have. And you know, I think the older that you get, the more that you're thinking of the future, and you know, whether it is buying a house or, you know, if you were to have kids in the future or something, like, you know, they are things that you have to consider all the time. But I think for two people that would have been 24 at the time to launch a business, the you know, the risk is lower. Absolutely. And it's something that we just decided like to have a go. But I think maybe for me, I, from a female perspective, maybe understood a little bit more of what was missing, and had those experiences that obviously you didn't. And I also had the experience of coming from a publishing publishing company, so I guess maybe had a little bit more exposure to the business model, where you'd obviously come out of an accountancy firm. You were like
I think we're both still learning, but me in particular still learning about the different revenue streams and
the potential that it has.
Yeah, and also just navigating the industry in itself. It's a minefield at times, like understanding how things work. Like, this is coming from someone who has four posts on his Instagram account. And Instagram is part of what we do. Like, it's part of what we sell. It's part of the content we create. So it's all learning. But I would say, the first year was difficult, but a learning,
I think it was
experience.
Understanding the business case. I think we knew that there was a demand for content and building and that type of thing, but I think you wanted to see the business case, which obviously absolutely needs to be done. And again, when those people that I do come across say like, oh, I'd love to have my own business, and I would say like, well, you know, is it an idea that you think is great, or do other people think it's great? Like, the important thing is that other people think it's great. And the other thing is like, how are you going to make money off it? Like, that's the important thing. Like, you know, obviously we're really passionate about what we do, but we have to be able to, you know, keep the doors open, the lights on, the team paid and everything to make sure that we can keep doing what we want to do.
I will say that, like, similar to what you said at the start, is people think being an entrepreneur is, and like,
glamorous.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even call myself an entrepreneur. I find that weird to say, but it's not always glamorous. It's not as like great.
It's not
as
glamorous
people,
at all.
But look, some people make it seem like it is.
Yeah.
And some people are like, oh, it's great, and it is great. You obviously work for yourself. It's your own passion product. It's something that you truly believe in. But it's not for everyone. It absolutely isn't for everyone, and is. I strongly believe that everyone is going towards the same path. It's just what path that you kind of choose to take, whether it's working in accountancy, whether it's creating Her Sport, whether it's doing whatever. You just have to find your own passion project and go towards it. I don't think
and sometimes that is, and I suppose to me, like you asked me earlier, like, did I think that I would work for myself? Like, for me,
you work for me.
Would have seen. Okay, fair. I would have been happy to be a leader in somebody else's business. You know, I would have happily like led a team, worked very hard for somebody else, and, you know, to be able to go home at whatever time and not have to be, like, yes, thinking about how to solve the problems, but not all of the responsibility lying on me. And I know I talked about, like, say maybe the hours that my dad would have worked and stuff, but, like, you know, I know obviously taking holidays is a privilege and a luxury, but, like, you know, to get a bit of time off, like, that wasn't always easy for him. And you know, if we went on holidays, the phone probably wouldn't stop ringing, and my mom wasn't thrilled about it. Same at the dinner table, there was like a no phones at the dinner table rule, as if he listened to that. The phone just continued. But you mentioned Instagram there, so do you want to share the news about Instagram and the journey that we've been on with Instagram for the last couple of weeks?
I'd say you're probably best place to talk about it, but I can tell everyone that we hit 60,000 followers on Instagram.
Okay, fine. So look, I suppose in relation to Instagram, we are on 61,800 as we are recording this, something that I constantly scroll down to see how many followers we have.
Honestly, like, when we're about to hit a milestone, my phone will just be counting down. I'll be getting messages being like 278, 279, 276. Constantly, like, every 3 minutes Neve's checking to see.
Well, we were growing by 1,000 followers a day, so I was just following the trend. But yeah, look, we hit 50,000 followers just over 3.5 weeks ago on Instagram, which was, you know, a big milestone, something we want to celebrate. But we've had some really, really good content that has just snowballed, and, you know, within 3 weeks we were up at 60,000 and it's still rolling, and I think that's something that's really exciting, like, particularly with the summer ahead. We have a lot of fun content planned. We have, you know, big upcoming competition with the Women's World Cup and a couple other things in the pipeline as well. So we had some targets for this year, and I think that we're going to have to readjust those targets based on the success that we have had. Do you remember the first time that we hit 10,000?
No.
Do you not?
No.
It was like July 11th, 2020 or something.
End of February
2021.
I remember it was a big deal because back in the day, if you hit 10k on Instagram, you could link stuff in your stories, like, actually have a link. So that's why it was so important hitting 10k, and, like, obviously we produce a lot of news content and content that it could drive people towards watching the website, content. So that was like a big milestone. But then Instagram, I'm pretty sure, like, not very soon after, Instagram changed that, so it was like, oh, we got 10k, but now everybody
can put links on. Yeah, and it was obviously, yeah, you're right, actually, I forgot that we were working towards being able to link to the website, because a lot of our you know, click-throughs to the website came from Facebook and Twitter at the time, and being able to do on Instagram was brilliant, because that's where a lot of our audience was. But yeah, no, I could end of February 2021 was then 20,000. So I'm sure we can read out some of the photographs of the different milestones. And then I think it was September or October was 30,000. So yeah, it's interesting. I think we were probably, like, really excited about 10 and 20,000, and then I think, you know, the focus shifts and we're just working so hard on other things. But definitely 50,000 was a big milestone, and really excited about the growth that we've had recently, and just watching that continue. But how do you think of the change of year one when we launched properly 2.5 months just before COVID started versus where we are now?
What do I think of the change? I think a big thing is, maybe I'll talk from a personal perspective, is that I fully believe in what we are doing now. There's that confidence that what we have, whether it's the advertising side of things, whether it's the workshops, whether it's the membership platform, I fully believe in it. I see huge value from a client perspective. The other change is, obviously, there's more...
You mean huge value for brands to partner with us and get in front of the audience?
Other than that, I think there's just so much. I think that's such a difficult question to answer, because everything's changed. Like, from, I think, ourselves, from the team side, from the content we're producing, from just how much more...
The quality has increased hugely.
Hugely. And I think we can also see the value in what we've built. Say, people who have been following us from the start would... know more about the athletes and want to see more about specific athletes, and I think we have a good relationship with our audience, in that if they ask for something, we're pretty good at delivering it. If they want to see X, Y, and Z, we'll deliver that.
Do our best to make sure we can.
So yeah, I think it's a difficult question to see how what changed, because the answer is everything has changed, like, everything. I couldn't pinpoint one exact thing, but
if you just throw back to that time, like, you know, we were just getting started, we did have our office, but at this time we can put up a picture again of what it looked like, but like looking around this room, it's a lot more colorful and that type of thing, and there's now a door behind us which leads to our own version of Narnia, which like was not there before. We just had this like big table and boring yellowy walls.
It's crazy to think it's the same place.
And then we were working with people virtually. We had a couple of people that wanted some work experience and were you know, creating content with us, but everything was virtual because COVID kicked in obviously in March. So it was trying to do as much of that as possible and get out as much content as can. But I think another one of the exciting things is Alana Canan was obviously one of the people that had started getting some work experience with us at that stage and is going to come on full time with us in September, which is nice to have been on that journey with her and for her to have seen the shift.
A way to answer that question is one thing that I think we are really good at her sport is trying different things and keeping up with the times and keeping up with trends and not, some people call it legacy media, not getting stuck into the traditional way of doing things and like that's the way we do it. We're not gonna change. I think we're very good at that and we're almost pushing boundaries for other people to try new things and the new people that we've brought into the team, the likes of Deb as well, she's bringing new ideas to showcase like this is what's trending on TikTok, this is what's trending on Instagram, these are the different content ideas that we should try and create. So I think it's showing as well when you look at the numbers and they speak for themselves. Like, we have an audience of only women's sport, and I won't name names of other people who we are catching, but when you think about it, they've been around for 10, 12, 15 years, and we're going to overtake them on social online media, which is crazy to think, and the resources they've had and the funding they've had behind them. So what's changed is that we are always changing. Like, we know that we can't sit still if we want to keep, particularly with women's sport, it's an industry that
it's digitally native.
Yeah, like look at all the top female athletes. They're all so active on social media because they have to be, because they're not getting the attention on traditional media. So I think that's what makes us so unique. And I think that's why people also veer towards what we're doing, is because we're basically on trend, which is nice.
Yeah, and I think in the content that we've put out in the last month, like three of those videos have over 1.5 million views, and they're continuing to go, which is crazy. Yeah. So just watching those numbers like keep going up, and like that's on Instagram alone. Like this, like similarly, like we've a video that's hit over 5 million on TikTok, and a few more videos that are 2 million, 3 million. So it's just, I suppose, as you said, like listening to what's going on, following the trends, and delivering what people want. Like, there's no point in doing the same thing that you've been doing for the last 2, 3, 4 years if it's not what people want. And like, you know, we have ongoing conversations around, you know, the type of content that we're going to put out, the type of media that we're going to put out, what efforts like are we putting into particular areas, like where are we allocating our resource to make sure that we're delivering the best things that we can, but also what people want. Like, you have to keep going, and things will change. Like, you know, Facebook as an example is, you know, something that worked really, really well for us at the start and grew really, really quickly, and then massively slowed down. And, you know, from a click-through rate and getting people onto the website, like it still is good. But like, our Facebook audience has been very slow to grow over the past number of years, where then you have something like TikTok where we had, you know, we were slowly growing towards 4,000, and then suddenly we've jumped up 25,000 more people in a very short space of time, which we won't see that growth probably ever again on Facebook. It'll just gradually grow. But
I think that's something that we want to, deliver on these podcasts as well over the next, what is it, a quarterly catch up that we're doing?
We're going to do it every quarter, yeah.
Lovely. So that's something that we'll probably discuss over the next series or podcast that we do. It's building social media platform, how to connect with an audience, try and
give a bit of behind the scenes of what we're doing, what's worked, what's to come, and letting people ask questions and that type of thing.
Offer as much advice as we can from what we've achieved so far
and insight. Like, I want to share with people like what are some of the things that we're working on, getting to know, you know, us as founders but also other members of the team better. What do people like, what do people want to see more of, What do we not need to do anymore if they're happy with that? Merchandise, what products do they want to see? And all
discount
that sort of
thing. Discount code podcast for 20% off.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
I hope so.
So obviously, like, we've experienced a lot of growth, and it can be hard sometimes always to pull yourself out and look at the landscape as a whole, because we're so immersed in women's sports, so we think that everybody knows about what's going on. And I was just talking to Chantal there, and she was talking about, like, Leah Williamson and a couple other people, and she's like, oh, they're such big names. And I was like, but are they just things that we know and people that we know because we do this every single day? And she was like, yeah, to be fair, she was like, her husband Harry was like, who's Leah Williamson? And that's part of all the education. Don't worry, Harry gets plenty of education at home. Yeah. But just in terms of the trajectory that women's sport is on, and I know you've done a lot of research in relation to the, you know, the upswing that it's experiencing, and from a commercial standpoint, but what do you think of the shift that we're seeing in women's sport? Is it happening faster than it was before? And then, you know,
I'll answer the question there. I think it makes sense. I think I know what you're saying. Is it happening faster than it was before? The answer is yes.
Okay.
From different aspects, if you look at it from attendance wise, like, we're seeing records being broken left, right and center, and they're not just being broken by a few thousand, like, they're being broken.
Obliterated.
They're being obliterated. And it's something that, of course, at the moment, they're one-off events or they're big events. So say, for example, it's a Champions League semi-final with Arsenal, or it's the Euros final with England-Germany. So it's one-off events. And the task now is that how can we make this more consistent, that it's not just these one-off events. And I think that's going to come by just getting people through the door. But it is happening, and it's...
Some sports more than others? Is that reasonable
absolutely.
To say?
To be honest, football is the biggest one that's seeing the biggest increase, and rugby as well.
Yeah.
But... it's happening, but at the same time,
there's still a lot of challenges.
And we're talking about the best of the best. We're talking about the Lionesses, England. We're talking about Arsenal. What about the smaller teams? Like, there's still so much to go, and there's still so much to do. But I think it's
a lot on local level too. Like, I actually found when we went over, I suppose we've been over in the UK a couple of times in the last year. We had the, you know, pleasure of going to a football conference over in London. We also went to the US-England friendly, and obviously two teams that are hugely supported. And that was after the Euros, so a lot of excitement during the teams. And I found that the entertainment and the effort that was put into entertaining the fans was huge. So I think that's a huge part of women's sport, and what anybody that's involved in women's sport, I don't mind if it's at local level or high performance and elite level. You have to think about it from, how are we entertaining? How are we, you know, making this, you know, a great experience for not only the athletes, but also the fans. Yeah. I think that's something that needs to be done. And something I think that we could learn a lot from, you know, people in the UK and in the US, I think we can learn a lot from that as Irish people, to just try and make that shift and understand the experience side. But there was a reason I was saying that.
Well, I think it is happening in specific sports, like we said, like football. That's showing you what's possible and what needs to happen. So say, for example, quickly before you go back to your point, if you look at Katie Taylor, she fought Chantal Cameron. Chantal Cameron should be a superstar in boxing, but no one knows her in the UK, which is crazy to think. Like, you're talking about the next, what should be the superstar of boxing. She just beat the undefeated, undisputed.
So Katie Taylor's Katie a history Taylor. Maker for women's boxing.
And she said she'd go home and no one would know who she is.
That's
which is
crazy. Yeah.
So it is, like you say, it's happening in certain sports.
Like, for a quick recap on Katie Taylor and her career, like, started off fighting as Katie Taylor when she was underage, because girls weren't allowed to participate in boxing here. Then was part of that display fight for the 2012 Olympics to get women's boxing into the Olympics, which went successfully. Then she came home with the gold medal and then has gone and you know, made her, you know, move to the professional side of things and, you know, headline Madison Square Gardens with Amanda Serrano, again, making history, selling out the stadium, et cetera, et cetera. So, as you said, to go up against a name like that who is, like, a huge name in boxing, not just in Ireland, across the world, and you're saying that, you know, someone that's just beaten her will not be known is quite surprising. It's crazy. I think one of the interesting things, like, we're, you know, a couple months out or a couple weeks out even at this stage for the Women's World Cup, and you just reminded me of something actually, that Germany was in the Euros final, and Germany is one of those countries that has not managed to get
the broadcast
deal done, and we are less than 50 days out from the Women's World Cup, and I find that shocking actually, as a, you know, I've been thinking about it. I'm surprised from a German perspective in general. I just thought that they would have been organized. But as people that actually ended up in the final of the Euros, I find that very surprising, even more so than if they had, you know, been knocked out earlier on in the competition. They should see huge value in that.
Yeah, well, they'll be one of the favorites for the tournament as well. So it is surprising. But I think, to like going back to the question, yeah, women's sport is on the rise. Things are changing, but not every sport, not every athlete. And we're a long way away from equity. I think that's important to say. Equality and equity are two different things, and equity is what's needed to achieve equality. But we're a long way away from that, and we're obviously getting there, but can things be faster? Should things be faster? Of course. And we're trying to change that. And I guess the other question some people would say is the competition, say, with more social media accounts, more media starting to pick up on women's sport, is that good or bad for us? I would say it's good for us, because at the end of the day, one, competition is always good. Like, we can now, like, you can never be happy with what you've achieved and sit in your hands, like, you'll just go stale. And two, the more people know about women's sport, the more people know about female athletes, can only benefit everyone trying to create content, because people want to see more. So I think that's another thing. And at the end of the day, our mission, like, if we strip everything back, the reason why we started was to change things for girls and women.
We wanted to see that media coverage. We wanted to see the opportunities for the high performance athletes, but also to see that change, you know, at local and grassroots level. I think, you know, from our perspective, like, we look at, you know, what's the volume of you know, high performance or elite female athletes, but most of what makes up sport is your local players, your grassroots players. So, you know, we're trying to change things across the board for everybody. I think in relation to, you know, whether it's social media accounts or other businesses and content creators that are coming out there, like, we're looking to do collaborations and partnerships with some of these content creators. And, you know, the other thing is, like, there's so many people covering men's sport, and they exist and have fans for different reasons. So, you know, that's the thing. Just because, you know, her sport exists doesn't mean that something else couldn't. Like, if you look in the US, I know there's an organization called Just Women's Sport where they, you know, cover a lot around women's sports, but then there's also ESPNW, and they're creating content around women's sport, and they're operating in the same space, but there is room for everybody. There's so much
absolutely.
To cover.
Well, yeah, like you say, just look at men's sport. There's 50 different outlets that are
minimum
that are covering Messi's left foot. So, like, there'll always be enough. It's about catering
and
to
there's a lot demand. Of there's a lot of opportunity, because I know, you know, we're in planning around some of the content that we're going to put out around the World Cup, and you know, I live with a couple of guys that are you know, big football fans, and, you know, I'm trying to learn from them, like, what are the type of content that they consume. Like, they follow football in a different way than I would follow it. Like, if I'm totally honest, like, I follow men's football from, you know, several steps back, and it's women's football that I'm following, and I'm certainly not an expert in the sport. But I'm watching what type of content they're consuming, and myself and yourself are obviously having this conversation of, you know, the different, like, fun content that we could create. But your point was, we're not quite there yet with some of the content, because the players aren't well enough known, or, you know, how do people really want the analysis of Louise Quinn's left foot or Denise O'Sullivan's right? We're not quite at that stage. Like, we have a long way to go before we get there. But I think it shows the potential, like, some of the, like, fun content that was being created, while we might not be able to create it this year and maybe even next year, it shows the potential concepts that we can do in the future that people will really enjoy. But that, you know, expertise and immersion as a fan has to happen before we get there.
I thought it was interesting. On our Instagram video that went out, the Do It For Her video, where the girls are trying to name the athletes and they don't know who Katie Taylor is, they don't know Leona McGuire is, Ellen Keane, etc. There was a comment on the post from an American athlete who said that the problem is that when girls are growing up, they aren't being encouraged to become sports fans. They're not encouraged to follow sport. And I think that was a really interesting comment that she made. I think a big misconception is that women have to watch women's sport and men watch men's sport. Like, that's absolutely not the case. Like, it'll never be the case. Sport is sport. But it's about creating content that brings in new people. And whether that's like who is Ellen Keane, like introducing you to the athlete so you build a connection with them, or creating content that is different? Like, women's sport is different to men's sport. It just is. Mm. So why are we creating content that is suited for men's sport? Like, women's sport needs to have its own unique
stamp.
Exactly. That you see individual content creators
you have to give the audience, the community, and the fans what they want. Like, that's the thing.
What they know.
You need to understand. Yeah, that's obviously part of kind of what we're talking about there, is that, like, you know, some of the things that we've been commended on, you know, with our rugby podcast is the fact that we, you know, make it accessible for mm-hmm. people. And I know I've spoken to you before about, like, you know, I feel like sometimes you might listen to the radio and you feel like you have to have been following football for mm-hmm. the last 10 or 15 years, because the way that things are mentioned and the kind of colloquialisms and stuff, like mm-hmm. if you haven't been a fan you just don't know what's going on, so it's not very welcoming. But I think in relation to sports fandom, like, that's something that I definitely would have you know, seen with friends and peers, and I find a lot of girls will have participated in sport, but once they finish playing sport, they're out, and they just don't really follow along as a sports fan. Now, they'll sometimes get involved for the big occasions, so, you know, the likes of Katie Taylor's fight in Dublin there recently, or for the likes of the World Cup and that we're playing.
It's these big events, though, is where you need to capture retain. It's no good having it for a one-off event and then everyone goes back to normal. It's like, these are the opportunities. And I think we'll probably finish up on this, but this is why I find it so disappointing that we haven't seen more activation and more awareness for the Women's World Cup at the moment. That's coming up in less than
it's not just about the
days.
Tournament, it's not just about the players, it's about the legacy that we can leave behind after.
And
we've seen the success from the Euros
hugely, and we've seen, like, I don't know, I know I keep using this as an example, but how many times do you hear about Italia 90? Like, how many times do you be like, oh, I remember when this happened? That is what the Women's World Cup is going to be in a month's time. Like, people are going to stop and watch. Like, people are going to watch this. It's just, now how are you going to make sure that they watch again and make sure that they go to the local matches and watch something else?
I know that your ambitions and your belief is that a lot of people will watch it. I think there is, but I also would feel that there's a lot more opportunity to get a lot more eyes on it. I think we'll have a lot of people that will follow and a lot of people that are interested, and, you know, obviously we've worked really hard to, you know, build our community and share as much news and knowledge and awareness as possible. But I definitely think that there's so many more people that would love to watch the games, but that information needs to be spread as far and wide as possible, and you know, we'd hope to see a little bit more of it. Well, I think we've definitely done an introduction on the business. We've covered a lot of different things, and I know we want to just keep the conversation going with our community, with our audience, so that they know what's going on behind the scenes with her sport, the developments of the team, you know, as they happen and when they happen, which will be our next catch up will be in 3 months. So I guess between now and then, we will be busy with a full summer of sport, obviously with the World Cup as one of the highlights. We will be starting the Changing Ireland Accelerator program next week, which is exciting, and we should have some more updates around that and our you know, the educational workshops and hopefully some of the online development stuff. So we should be about 3 months into that program as well, so we'll have lots of updates, and maybe we'll bring one of the team in onto the next conversation.
Sounds good. Catch you next time.
Is that all right?